It's paranormal and scientific. It's both of them.
See, I told you to be a quick break, you guys. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
And I'm Karma, and I want to bite you.
That's because we, as the hosts of Ghostly Talk, have had, like, during the breaks, it was nonstop. Because, do you know, we have Catherine Ramslin on the line, and we are talking with the author, Catherine Ramslin, the Anne Rice biographer, the one who wrote Ghost, about ghost hunting, the one who wrote Cemetery Stories, which hooked me, hook, line, and sinker, on her work. So we have Catherine Ramslin. So we were, you know, talking to her the entire time through the break.
And some of the questions, you're like, maybe I should save it for when we go back on the air.
Right, because everything is so interesting. That's the problem. In case you want to know, Catherine Ramslin, she has a website, and I know everybody who listens to Ghostly Talk is internet connected. So go to www.catherineramslin.com. So K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, Catherine Ramsland, R-A-M-S-L-A-N-D, .com. It is also linked up through the Ghostly Talk website. So if you go to ghostlytalk.com, and now she's in our upcoming guests, because she's at the time she was still upcoming, she'll be moved down to a permanent place in our guest lineup in that one box, you know, over on the right. So there'll always be a link to her website on the Ghostly Talk website. So CatherineRamsland.com, you'll get to see all the a discussion of all the books that she's written and stuff like that. And upcoming, what's upcoming? You've got upcoming projects as well, don't you, Catherine?
I have something coming September 7th, which is a forensics book. It's the Science of Cold Case Files, which is the use of forensics to look at cases that people thought would never get solved, and now they're getting solved. That's coming up. That's actually with the A&E Network. And then I have... Oh, this is a good one. You like this one. I co-wrote a book with a man who exhumes the famous dead to find out what really happened to them.
Ooh.
I had a lot of fun with that one because it was interesting, exhuming people and in all different states, from bone to, you know, someone who'd only been buried 9 months.
Okay, so you went to actual exhumations where they broke the earth and pulled out the coffin? Or do you mean... Oh,
I seen the picture on the website of a grave being dug up. I seen that on her site.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's one of the ones that we did. So that's coming out in February. He's a law professor, and this is one thing something he does on the side. It's very interesting.
I'm amazed with those forensic shows. I always thought, though, with all the forensic shows that are coming up, you know, showing what they do and how they solve crimes and stuff.
Right.
People that are watching that, if they ever want to commit a murder. It's kind of like a little insight on how to kind of somewhat.
Yes, it is, but guess what? Most people are nevertheless still clumsy or stupid in the what
Sloppy.
They do, and they do leave clues behind no matter how careful.
Well, it also speaks to because you're a psychologist and everything, so you know the psychology of people. If you're going to do that kind of thing, there is a huge chance, I believe, that you actually want to get caught.
No, that's not true.
Are you sure? Are you sure? I would think
you're listening to some movie or...
No, that would be... I'm as brainwashed as everybody else. That's all I can say. But no, I mean, I really think that a lot of what people do is to get attention.
Right.
Well, I mean, look, I'm doing a radio show.
There used to be a myth that serial killers really wanted to get caught, and there was only one serial killer who wanted to get caught.
Oh, okay. Okay,
you know,
well, that makes
sense. And he wrote on the lipstick on the wall, "Please catch me before I kill again." That's the only guy who ever did that.
Okay.
Out of that story, which took place in the 1940s, grew the myth that they really want to get caught, and that myth has been perpetrated in novels and films.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't true.
So you don't think people... Well, I mean, people, they don't... Don't you think people want attention?
Some want attention, but some want to keep doing it because it's a compulsion. It's an addiction, and usually people don't want to give up their addiction. They want to get thrown in prison where they can't get access to what they're addicted to.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense than wanting to get caught.
Right.
You
want to continue doing what you want to do.
You actually worked as a profiler, didn't you?
I worked with the FBI profilers. I co-wrote one guy's book, and I did research for John Douglas. I co-wrote Greg McCrary's book, and... You know, we worked our way through all that. And I actually do some consulting on investigations and murder trials and what's called a psychological autopsy, where that's where you're not clear how someone died. It could be accident, homicide, or suicide, and nobody knows. And so a psychologist like myself can come in and help to determine which one is more probable based on psychological evidence.
Hmm.
Well, and that goes to the pervasiveness of everything. I mean, you've got obviously, you know, Profiler isn't that a series on like USA or something? And
yeah.
the cold, you know, like the cold case kind of thing where you use forensics to solve things. That
right.
That your upcoming book that's all over. There's like two or three different programs about that kind of.
Oh yeah, there are, and some of them get it wrong, and most of the movies get it wrong because they have to over dramatize things, and that's too bad because what happens is the media picks up on it, and they start expecting people to speak that way. And then they find fraudulent people who will speak that way, and they misrepresent the profession. And that's happened a lot of times lately, which is, you know, something that's irksome to me. When I teach a serial killer's course, and one of the first things I do is give them the long list of myths. And I say, you have to forget all these things that you learned from Silence of the Lambs and all these other things, and so that you can learn the truth. Because if you walk in here with all these notions that you picked up from the media, you will not understand what I'm talking about.
And, well, that's true about almost anything. Their media, I mean, Hollywood, they...
Yep.
They totally, you know, blow everything. Well, dramatize. You know, they have to do it to make tickets.
But I'm telling you, the drama's already there. Believe me, we've got great cases. They don't have to, but they just do it anyway.
You know,
like CSI. I wrote the forensic science of CSI, so I did a lot of background work on them. They'll take a real case and they'll put their own twist to it, but the real case is usually better than their twist.
Did you start that huge controversy that's going around now about how CSI is? They're making the expectations of jurors, they're raising the level of expectations of jurors.
That is correct, they are. In fact, I was just at a trial where the DA started out saying that you are going to expect, based on that TV show, you're going to expect this and this and that, but that is not the way real life works. That's not the way CSIs work. In fact, it's not at all how CSIs work. And you aren't necessarily going to get the nice, clean-cut, quick delivery of results. But yeah, that is the truth. Juries actually have come to, and that's going on in the Scott Peterson case right now. Juries have come to expect certain things that few cases will deliver, because few cases are that clean that the way they do the show.
Right. They wrap up this whole case in like an hour.
Yeah, most
from beginning to end.
Because crime labs are backed up. Most take months. There's no way you can get those kinds of results that fast. But also, CSIs do not do the work of detectives the way they do in the show. They're not detectives. They're technicians. So, right off the bat.
So they took that. That's where their what do they call that? The liberties that you can take as a writer.
Yeah, well, they can take
as a fiction writer.
But the thing is, they don't need in many cases. So why are they doing it? They're just promoting a false idea and without the need for drama, because real life will supply that, you know. It just blows me away.
Well,
whenever I sit and watch some stupid movie on a serial killer, knowing what I know, because I'm doing the whole history of serial killers, I know hundreds of cases, and they're amazing. Knowing that and watching how stupid and drab these movies are, I just think, you know, it's got to be that people are just doing poor research. Or else they think everybody has to watch things that are by the formula, and that's all the American public can handle. I don't agree with that, and I really have a hard time with these movies.
Well, are there any unique movies? Have you seen any movies that don't subscribe to formulas and might be recommended? What's your favorite kind of movie like that, then?
The one that I thought was tending to get it right was Red Dragon. And I'll tell you why. It's because they started with victimology. They really did a good job with how the guy studied the victims before he made any conclusions. But see, that was written before Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
Silence of the Lambs is very formulaic. Red Dragon was actually closer to what profilers would do. And even the guy was closer to what killers are like than either Hannibal Lecter or Buffalo Bill. Now, Buffalo Bill was a composite of three actual serial killers, but there are no serial killers who would be like him.
Have you ever gotten to sit down with a serial killer and talk to them personally?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And did they say anything about, like, some of their victims might be coming back and haunting them, or are they...
I had one guy who was afraid of that. Yeah, he really was afraid of that. But, you know, it's less the serial killers who say that than just the situational murderers, like somebody who murders his wife or something like that, because he's not generally a psychopath. A psychopath is somebody who's not emotionally connected into relationships and stuff the way most of us are. So it doesn't matter as much to them. They aren't affected by remorse or guilty conscience. So they're not going to tend to say those things the way someone who has murdered, you know, to get money or, you know, because he has an affair going on or something. That's so, the kind of person who will tend to be to say he's afraid.
So there's no guilt in a, you know, there's nothing to bring you back to reality if you're already a psychopath.
Yeah,
like you
well,
don't have
don't
the
have,
guilt.
They don't actually
have
the physiological mechanisms. Their brain doesn't connect into emotional content of anything.
Well, how about, there's an extreme example of somebody who was guilty over her husband's, not direct killings, but indirect killings, Sarah Winchester.
Oh, that was a good one. That's a really good one. I've been in the Winchester house. That's very bizarre.
You know, every time you say you've been somewhere or you've talked to someone, Bonnie, our friend Bonnie, is sitting on the couch and she's going, ooh, she's just so excited. She wants to go to all these
places. I make
places.
A point of doing these things. I go find them and I go, that's why my name is Indiana Jones.
That's it. So what was going on with Sarah Winchester? Because she wasn't, she didn't kill anybody. She didn't, her husband didn't really kill anybody, but he sold the guns that were used to kill people. So.
Well, but also she was being told by psychics and such that the victims of these guns were, you know, they demanded certain things be done that they wouldn't disturb her, so that they could have some peace. And it's just a bunch of scams, but she bought into it because she was scared and vulnerable and delusional. So she just kept having... She had to keep constructing, you know, all these doorways that went nowhere, and the hallways that were endless, and, you know, rooms that led into other rooms, and on and on and on. She just had to keep busy. I think it really had to do with the fact that she probably had a psychopathology, and that just fed it. That was the image that formed for her, and that was her way of keeping busy. But I would guess she had some kind of brain disorder that just built that frenzy up into her to keep doing that. Because the house is just nuts. I mean, it's one thing to constantly be building, but this is a totally irrational floor plan.
Now, Al Capone.
Yes.
It was said that by, like, some of the guys as, like, right-hand man, left-hand man,
yes,
middle man or whatever, had said that towards, like, the end of his death, he was being haunted as well from some of the people that were murdered in that Valentine's Day
St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah, the massacre. And
right.
he spoke to it with, you know, a few people he had told about it, but he said that some of the spirits and souls that he, you know, was involved with the murder of was coming back and tormenting him. And some people say that it was just because he had the syphilis and it was taking over his mind.
Well, that can be because syphilis is right, puts you right at the border of you're still okay, but you're almost psychotic, and that middle, that kind of no man's land mentally is a place where people do actually, the brain chemistry actually produces ghost-like entities and the feeling that God is there and whatnot. You can actually bring your brain to that state with a drug called DMT, which is produced in our brain, but if you put more of it in, you will have these spiritual states. So that could very likely be that he's registering it through the guilt, but it's really a manifestation of what the brain is doing.
So what do you think of near-death experiences then? I mean, because we're going right into brain chemistry, and
right,
and that's one of the... maybe
the theory, that it's not a theory that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of children who are not exposed to any of the cultural stuff with near-death experience will describe things that they shouldn't necessarily be aware of. I mean, I know the brain theories, and I sometimes scientists propose these just so they can dismiss everything else and just have nothing but physiological explanations. But I think when they do that, they haven't really looked at the whole phenomena. And it just doesn't cover it. Just like when I read people's ghost theories, most of them will cover part of it, but not all of it. And that's actually why I wrote Ghost, was because I really wanted to explore, you know, how can we get a theory that really covers all these manifestations, like a ghost train. You know, for God's sake, that's not an organic entity. Why are people seeing ghost trains and ghost ships and ghost cars and stuff like that, or ghost dogs and wolves? We need a theory that covers that as well. So I do find scientists oftentimes being like that and just being dismissive of anything that doesn't fit the physiological worldview.
That's actually very encouraging.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because for some reason you've already thought about all this stuff.
Well, I mean, this is the kind of work that I go through. I mean, you'll see if you get ghosts.
I am getting it, I promise.
Yeah, I have a whole theory about it that is based on the psychoneuroimmunology idea of mind and body being one, along with phantom limb phenomena and the emotional brain. I put all this stuff together because I think that we need to start really looking at the phenomena instead of being so caught up with having to have simplistic explanations for everything. I think if we have to have a complex explanation, let's have one. Better to have one that really addresses it all than to cut out phenomena that people are really experiencing.
Okay, I have a question. Okay, people who are like labeled as like schizophrenics and stuff, that like they hear voices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what if they're really hearing like voices from the other side, like spiritual voices?
Well, okay, first of all, you wouldn't call someone a schizophrenic. You would say they have, it's like an illness, they have schizophrenia.
Okay.
Along with the voices will be a number of other physiological symptoms and delusions. So you would diagnose someone with schizophrenia, and there's different kinds of schizophrenia, not just based on voices, but based on a number of behaviors and patterns across a certain period of time. You wouldn't just automatically say because someone's hearing voices, they're schizophrenic. They have schizophrenia. You wouldn't. I mean, some people do that, but they shouldn't do that. So it's a whole constellation of factors that go into that diagnosis. And they will manifest the illness by their inability to, like word salad, for example, is they'll start talking to you and they'll go off on all different kinds of digressions and they'll put many words together that don't make any sense, but it makes sense to them. So you know right off the bat there's something, they're not communicating, but they're locked in their own delusional world. So there would be that, and within that, they're going to get the either auditory or hallucinations. And usually it is auditory, and usually those hallucinations will be repetitive, like command hallucinations, commanding you to go do something or blaming you for something or telling you something over and over, like you're scum or you're this or that. So you're going to see that is, in fact, a physiological manifestation. It's not the same as what we're talking about with the ghost voices. There's just such a qualitative difference that you really wouldn't be able to confuse someone with genuine, full-blown schizophrenia with these people who are claiming, you know, they're hearing ghost voices. Because some people don't need the tape recorder. They say they can hear them. And I think that's true because I think some people's physiology, for example, my sister had epilepsy, and she actually heard, after my grandmother died, she actually heard her voices like floating in the air, like, you know. So, and I'm not going to say that she didn't. I think she probably did. She can, because her physiology is such that she may be more attuned to that or more able to hear that than someone like me, who's much more grounded without that same kind of brain abnormality. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally.
That's really interesting because, again, I'm, you know, brainwashed and learning here. I really think I've heard stories, and those could very well just be internet stories or, you know, urban legends and things of people who were ghost hunters or spiritual mediums and stuff who were then just slapped in the funny farm. You know, because
that wouldn't be surprising, because if they in fact have the kind of physiology that may be on that border, do you know what I mean?
So it's not necessarily just because they are claim to be a medium.
No, I think it's because they already are predisposed physiologically to receiving that kind of stuff, but there's something that they're, you know, almost wrong with them, and as they get older, whatever was almost wrong becomes bad enough where they can't function anymore.
Okay.
That's what I would guess.
This kind of goes back to, like, when I was talking about that neuropsych testing I took.
Yeah, you took that
There was a few questions on there that I wanted to say so bad.
As a matter of fact, we've got Catherine Ramblin on the phone. You should ask her that.
What?
Tell her about some of those questions. Karma took this test.
It's for short-term memory loss.
Right.
I was in an accident or whatever, and I have some short-term memory loss, so I had to take this neuropsych test. And it was a series of 500 questions.
Okay.
And some of them that they were asking was, I sometimes see things that other people do not see. Well,
the MMPI?
Well, I of course, said no or false because, you know, I didn't want them to think I was
hallucinating everything.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And then another one was, sometimes I hear voices that I don't know where they're coming from. Well, I said false on that one, too. And then another one was ghosts or spirits can have the effect on humans' behaviors or mood problems, which I think if, like, you were, you know,
possessed,
that would be true. So I put false as well because I didn't feel like
The thing is, the person who's interpreting that test is going to be interpreting within a certain worldview, and those questions are set up to catch delusional people.
Right.
But what happens if you, like, you read the question, you want to be honest, because I have heard voices.
So have I.
They haven't ever commanded me to, you know, rob anybody
or
whatever.
Anything.
Yeah. But I've heard, you know, disembodied voices that I thought were ghosts, you know.
Yes.
I saw one ghost once, so I know I've seen a ghost.
I think it's not germane to what you're there for. You shouldn't answer questions like that.
Okay.
I did good then.
Then you did the right thing, Karma.
Yeah, well,
and having done assessments, people can get themselves into some real trouble.
You know what, too, is he was, like, questioning, asking, like, what are some of your hobbies and stuff. And I said, well, I do an internet talk show called Ghostly Talk. And he's like, mostly talk? I go, no, Ghostly Talk. He's like, the paranormal? I go, yeah. So then I think that kind of, like, maybe, like, got them thinking a little bit, and then I just kind of, like, went from there and used my best judgment because I didn't want anybody coming in a paddy wagon.
Those questions aren't about neurophysiology. Those are about something else. You know, that's about belief systems and things like that. So I can understand why they would put that out there for you. But typically, to go through a real neurophysiological test, you have to go through a battery of tests. You're going to have a number of different things. You should. It shouldn't just be a 500.
No, I went through it was like a two-day event.
if there's some genuine physiological problem, they'll get a pattern through those tests.
Well, I could kind of pick up on the questions because they would say, like, I want to be a mechanic, true or false. And then a little bit later on, they're like, I would like to be a florist, true or false. And then I think people are stealing from me, true or false. I think people are following
the MMPI. That has to be the MMPI you took. That's not a neuro test.
Oh, that's just
there was like it was just like a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah,
like,
that is a long test, and it really is to pick up psychological disorders.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then you did good by not saying that you're like being followed and
people are stealing from me.
That will actually pick up when you tell lies too. By the way,
yeah, because they twist the questions around.
That's right.
Throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Because there's a lie scale, and the lie scale will, if it comes up very high, it will invalidate your results.
Ah, I see.
Interesting. Well, did you get your results back, or do they keep them?
Well, I'm supposed to end up going back over the test results with them, but I have to schedule an appointment, and I haven't done that yet.
So. Well, that'll be interesting. You guys, we have to take another quick break. We'll make this a really, really fast one, because I want to get back with Catherine Ramblin for our last half hour. Yes, only one more half hour. So if you're in the chat rooms, go to the chat rooms. Go to www.ghostlytalk.com or go to pioneer.rolo.net. Get in the chat rooms if you're not in there already. Ask questions. If we see them, we'll relay them to Catherine Ramblin. As you can tell, we're all over the map here because, Catherine, you're fascinating. But we are going to take a really fast break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Okay.
with Katherine Ramsland.
MrOla.com. See what you've been missing out on.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Services such as web and pop 3 email, image editing, and logo design at very low rates.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Free streaming and downloadable videos.
MrOla.com. That's www.MROLAF.com.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Hi, this is Lisa Butler, American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena. Our website is aaevp.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
What's the nut?
Listen to W Paranormal Talk Radio, Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Pioneer Radio Network. For show information, visit wparanormal.com.
I walk into the room. You don't have to scream, I can hear you. Bad trip, the needle sticks. You get your fix from confrontation. I try to make it past. I don't wanna get into it right now. Can this family have one day to get away from all the pain? Through the night I've seen the light, shining from the neighbor's windows. I dream of life where I'm safe, in a home where I am not alone. Someday I will lay me down on the grass where everything is greener. It always seems so good on the other side. Sick of all the heat, you can taste the hate in the air. Running through this family uncomfortably, it's burning me. Is anybody there? In your eyes there's nothing to see. Just because your dreams have died, don't drag me down, I still got mine. Through the night I see the light, shining from the neighbor's windows. I dream of life where I'm safe, in a home where I am not alone. Someday I will lay me down on the grass where everything is greener. It always seems so good on the other side. Neighbor boy runs up to me, his eyes all black and blue. I say, what happened to you, boy? And my daddy flew off the hook cause I was playing too loud. I guess he couldn't hear the TV. Said, son, I'ma teach you a lesson. We'll be right back.
just in case you weren't paying attention for the first hour and a half, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
And I am Karma.
And of course, Will's bringing up the volume so that we can talk to everybody. We have as our extra special guest this week, Catherine Ramflin, author of Ghost, author of Cemetery Stories, author of 24 or so books, with another coming out about the science of forensics, which of course is really big news nowadays. And so we're talking with Catherine Ramflin. However, I have to say, during the break, this break seemed to center around Gettysburg.
Of course.
Yes, because the Ghostly Talk crew is going to Gettysburg, and Catherine is very familiar with it. So what we were talking about was, how could you possibly get onto these battlefields? The only way you can do it is, like, during the daytime hours or during the actual, you know, posted park hours.
And not after 10, I heard.
Right, not after 10. So we're trying to get around that somehow. And we were asking Catherine just before the break ended.
Yeah,
are there fences? How do they keep this out? Evidently, it's patrol. So, Catherine, what I wanted to know was, like, are there areas of the road where you can pull over even at, like, midnight or something? And just,
not on,
like,
the central battlefield, but there are outlying areas that were also battlefields and even parts of the town that you can go without trespassing or, you know, bringing the wrath of the Rangers down on you. You stay off the main part of the battlefield because that's patrolled. You can't, there's no way to pull off and hide. You can't do it.
Okay. Okay.
Because they'll know violation.
Get,
it actually is against the law, so don't do it. But there are places like Saxbridge, the eastern part of the battlefield, there's a few other places. I'm not sure if you can go to Spanglish Spring. That's something you can ask at the Markness, but the Ghost of Gettysburg office.
Mm-hmm.
But they will know where you can go, and they will have maps and all kinds of stuff. They'll be able to tell you what's a place you can go at night.
Then that's our first stop when we get there. We're going to be exhausted, too, because we will have been... Oh, first, before I tell you what we're doing the night before, to sum up the entire last half hour, there is evidently some amount of normal interest in the paranormal you can have without being thrown in, you know, the loony bin. So, because you're doing it, and I think I'm relatively normal.
But I'm calling you from the loony bin.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I didn't check the caller ID. Oh, we don't have caller ID on this line. Bummer. but what happens is that, you know, and I'm glad that there's a normal amount. However, I think that we might go a little abnormal coming up in September, because this is going to be basically 10 days of 100% ghostly stuff. We're starting out... Have you ever been to Mansfield Reformatory, Catherine?
Oh, you know, this is the funniest thing. I just got an email yesterday inviting me to go there. I know what you're talking about. I haven't been there, but they had experiences that they told me about there.
I'm telling you, this will be my third or fourth time. Coming up next month, I'm going to Mansfield Reformatory. We're going to spend... That's an all-nighter.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so all night we're going to be there, like, exploring this haunted old prison, right? And of course, you pay $50, and the it's a donation, and you can write it off taxes, and that goes toward restoring this place, and it's going to take millions upon millions of dollars to restore this place.
Yep.
And in this particular case, it's worth every penny, not only of the $50 donation, but it's worth every penny because what they're going to be doing with this place, it's so worth it to the world, to history, to, you know, the haunting, to everything, you know.
Yep.
Paranormal. This place is worth it. And we're going to be going there for an overnighter. Then the next night we're staying in a haunted house that's shaped like an octagon. And then we're going to be staying there with some other ghost hunting groups as well. Then that's when we head out to Gettysburg. So we will have been up, right?
Like, yeah.
48 hours with us.
We'll see a few ghosts, I think.
We'll see ghosts.
Maybe
and
a couple of possessions.
Yeah, pink elephants.
Are you going to go over to Harper's Ferry on this trip?
Do you know, we read about Harper's Ferry. Didn't it say that that was, like, one of the most haunted...
Yeah, that's a pretty cool place. You would go down from Gettysburg toward Antietam, which is actually a nicer battlefield because it does have any monuments on it, and then over to Harper's Ferry, which is really a great town.
That's
lots
interesting.
Lots of ghosts there.
I think we may have to look that up. And
not far from Gettysburg.
That's a good idea. We should probably do that because it said it was like notoriously haunted.
I'm so glad we have Catherine on right now.
Oh, tell me about it. This is helping for next month.
So,
and yeah, Bonnie's writing down itineraries right now. So what happens is then we're going to go to Gettysburg for like 3 or 4 nights, and then we're going to go to Ohio, and then we're going to go to Point Pleasant, West Virginia for the Mothman Festival.
Hey, wonderful.
That's quite a week.
Yeah, that is. That's a good one.
So that's why you're getting so many questions about Gettysburg right now.
Right. I mean, I've spent a lot of time there.
Oh, man. I'm really excited. I know I was going to try and get a hold of Mark. I couldn't get a hold of him last week. But
how are you
trying
to get a hold of him?
I'm just calling the office. But I think I'm doing it. I have to do it after work.
Uh-huh.
And so I think they're probably closed by then, or they're out on their tours by then.
Because there's still people in the office. But you know what? They oftentimes will just let it go.
That could be.
Didn't you record a message, though?
Well, I'm not very good at that. I don't like to do that.
That's
my
usually
own.
What they do.
Yeah? Well, then maybe I'll do that.
Yeah.
But I know we're going to make that our first stop when we get there. We'll send Bonnie in.
Yeah, they're great, too. They're very helpful. And just, you know, tell them I sent you.
Cool.
Definitely.
They know me very well, and I was, in fact, just out there for July 4th.
I think I'll put this show on CD and give it to them. And say, here's Catherine Ramsland on our show.
That's fine. In fact, tell them I really promoted their place.
They'll be like, oh my gosh, she talked about Gettysburg on the show, and it was supposed to be about her books.
Yeah, but yeah, I think my books are there in their shop.
Oh, we can, do you know if they've got
copies, in fact.
Do they have copies of Ghost?
They do.
There we go.
Yep.
I know exactly what I'm buying. I'm taking extra money.
I was just going to say that. I think I have to grab a couple more bucks, too.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
They might even have the hardcover, which is better to get than the paperback, because the hardcover has more pictures.
Oh, man.
Aww.
That's it. I bring in my gold card. Because, oh, my gosh. Yeah, this is pretty cool. So you wrote Ghost. You actually went out ghost hunting. How much weird stuff has happened? Like, just some of the highlights of the book, because you already know I'm already convinced. I'm buying the book. So what kind of cool stuff happened? Floating heads?
The one that happened after the book was published, which is one of my favorite stories. After it was published, a different editor who was working with me on a book about finding your bliss, I guess, or something like that. She called me and said, I'd done an interview online with Salon.com, and she said, I just saw your interview. I have to tell you this story. So this is completely unsolicited. You know, I had no idea she was anything to say. She said, she told me about how her two twin sisters would, every year, they would watch the Academy Awards together. And this year, she said, one of them died. And so the other one couldn't watch, so she recorded it. And then when she went, you know, got herself in, to the point where she could watch it, superimposed over the award show was the voice of the sister who had died telling her she was okay.
Oh,
wow. I love that story.
Wow, that is
That's absolutely incredible. I didn't go looking for that story. They came to me. And that was an editor who I work with and completely trustworthy. So when I hear, you know, I can always hear stories. People are always telling me stories, and sometimes they're wishful thinking, and, you know, I can tell that they just so badly want something to be. But something like that is really extraordinary.
Psychologically, do you think that helps? Like, is that what the sister who was still living,
like,
she needed that? Is that, like, comforting to her, or would that just upset
her? Certainly. I mean, you lose a twin, you've lost a little part of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably a bigger loss even than most of us realize. But it isn't as if she was looking for comfort through that or even expecting to hear her sister's voice. But certainly the sister would know the level of grief and be aware of that. And yes, and I've heard a lot of stories like that where people come back to say, I'm fine, stop, you know, let it go, stop worrying about me.
That's so beautiful and romantic, and it's just, it's got, that pushes all the buttons. Because
it does push all the buttons, and yet it's a very credible story because this person who told me didn't even, you know, wasn't even thinking about ghosts. We weren't working on ghost projects, we were working on other stuff. You know, and so it comes to me out of a context, completely something that nobody expected to happen.
Yeah, so it had no, it wasn't like it was even contrived. It was
contriving, no,
this
nothing.
Makes...
It just sort of spontaneously said, oh my God, I saw you did this ghost stuff, and I have to tell you what happened.
That's amazing.
Did you get to hear it? Did you get to view it?
No, I didn't.
It's probably very personal to that sister.
Yeah, and I wouldn't ask.
Yeah, that's going to be a very personal thing. Like our stuff, when we're out ghost hunting and we get a recording or something like that, yeah, we'll play it on the air and put it on the
one
website.
One of the coolest things I think I saw while I was doing this was, and this again happened in the ghost house, oftentimes we would set cameras up in the attic of the ghost house, just set them up and go do something else. And one of the neat things that we got were like two, you know, the orbs, which are the kind of white balls of light that you get on infrared in motion. We got two go across the lens, and at the same time, we recorded a voice that said, "Catch me."
Oh, wow.
I like that. That's so interesting. It's not something you'd expect at all.
When is the Catherine Ramsland DVD-ROM coming out? Because I want to see this stuff on DVD.
That stuff, you know, the person who does that is Rick Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy you need on your radio show. Rick Fisher. He does Paranormal Pennsylvania. He does a conference at Gettysburg, and he does Bigfoot and, you know, every kind of paranormal, anything. But he's the one, and he's in Ghost. He's one of the main characters that I encountered who taught me the equipment. And he's the one who got that. And he, I don't think I've ever seen more phenomenal footage ever except this guy's stuff. I mean, he'll go to places, and I'm telling you, the stuff he gets on infrared is amazing. So he's a good one to talk to.
I wonder if he's already going to the Mothman conference, because it's not that far. It's one state down.
Depends on whether he's already committed to something else.
Yeah, that's what we find. Same
thing. Here's one that happened to me this summer. Do you want to hear this one?
Yeah.
Okay, this is in a haunted hotel, a miner's hotel in western Pennsylvania, right by Johnstown. Now, if you know anything about Johnstown, there was a huge flood in the 1800s that killed many thousands of people. And so they built up higher from Johnstown, in the mountains, and this particular town had all these miners' hotels where the miners would stay while they were, you know, working the mines and whatnot. Most of them were from Russia or someplace. And so this hotel got run down, decrepit, and the woman who owned it died. And so it went on eBay, and so a friend of mine bought it. In fact, you know the guy, because you read Cemetery Stories, Blair, who was the son of two funeral directors.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he bought it on eBay for $10,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I tell you, no characters. And so he heard from a psychic that there were bodies buried in the basement. It was a dirt basement. So I said, I'll get a cadaver dog handler up there, and we'll take a look and, you know, go through it. And we got the handler. Her name is Sandy. We ran the dog through the basement. He wasn't interested in the basement, but he did alert on a wall on the second floor, in one of the second floor rooms. Now, mind you, nobody's living here. This is like a rundown place. It used to be a hotel. Blair lives there, but nobody else does. So he alerts on the wall, and so Blair says, yeah, let's just, you know, take it down and see what's in there. And we found these substances that I thought looked like mummified bone. In fact, we have had, talk about forensics, that we put it through the scanning electron microscope and found calcium readings. So we know there's some calcium in it, so it's not just stone or something. It's something like bone. Anyway, so we got that, and then we went through the whole night doing all kinds of stuff to get ghost activity, and we got orbs and all that, but that wasn't that interesting to me. The next morning, there were four of us on this trip. The next morning, three of us were outside, and Sandy was inside. She's the dog handler, and she was using the restroom that's right beneath the stairs, the second floor. And we heard her yelling, so Blair went in, and she was halfway up the stairs. And he says, what are you doing? And she said, well, Catherine wants us upstairs. And I walked in behind him, and she looked at me with these wide saucer eyes. How did you get down there? I said, what are you talking about? She says, you just said, Sandy, get up here now.
Oh, my gosh.
I wish you would have gone all the way out. I said, I was outside with your dog, and I wasn't talking to anybody.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that kind of stuff is, that kind of stuff's happened to us, too, where you hear, you know, somebody
who's
familiar.
Yeah, his voice was loud, and it was yelling at her. Get
oh,
up here.
Man. And she heard that with her ears.
Yeah, she heard it. She thought it was me. It was my voice, she said. And I said, no.
It sounds like they might have a prankster ghost in there, then.
Indeed.
That's pretty cool. When's he opening it?
He's not going to open it.
Oh, bummer.
I told him that I could write about this and get all kinds of people up there to stay.
I'm absolutely positive.
Yeah, he's just not in that frame. He may eventually, but it's not going to happen soon.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of his home right now, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
We'll see what, I think he could do something with it. I think people would go, especially because we, you know, that's a great story. It's one of the best ones that I've had with all the stuff I've done. And well, in fact, it went from there. There was more that happened after that, but it's a very complicated story. I'm going to have to write it up and get it published somewhere. But he's not opening it that I know of to anybody. I mean, it isn't that you couldn't go and stay there. You could. You could go there ghost hunting. But you're not going to get great accommodations, if
right.
I can tell you that.
Right, it's not like it's
if you wanted
thing.
To, in fact, if you wanted to go there and broadcast out of there.
I wonder if he'd let us do that. That would be really freaky.
He would probably
look it
be
up,
fine
Catherine.
With that.
Because if you could, you know, because if you could do that and you get, because during the broadcast, obviously we're doing a lot of recording because we record the shows.
Yeah.
And then we put them up on the website so people can download them later. Well, who's to say there's not like another host ghost, voice coming through on the recording, which would be really, really amazing to capture.
Yeah.
So, but this is like the ghost hunting thing and the ghosts and stuff like that. They're so pervasive lately because I was just flipping channels. My nieces were over. And of course, they're of the age where they watch cartoons 24/7 because now they've got whole channels on satellite just for cartoons. Well, we're flipping through the cartoon channels in particular, and there comes this one on called Somebody Phantom, Danny Phantom.
Yeah.
The whole premise of the cartoon is that his parents were like scientists, but then they turned into ghost hunters, and they build these gizmos to try and capture ghosts, right?
Right.
And Danny Phantom is the son of these two cartoon parents, and he goes into one of these gizmos and pushes the wrong button and suddenly assumes ghost powers. That's the premise of the entire cartoon. And then a lot of the cartoon is about how silly the mom and dad are for being ghost hunters, but at the same time, everything they come up with and everything that they do are very helpful in this quest to, you know, combat notorious evil ghosts, right? So, you know, they're helpful yet silly at the same time. Danny Phantom, of course, has these powers where he can turn invisible and do ghostly looking things.
Okay.
That's a children's cartoon.
Yeah.
There's two new, as of last year, I think, there were two new slot machines. And one of them is called Ghost Hunter. And I looked for it when I was in Las Vegas.
Digital equipment has made this kind of thing so much more accessible. It used to be all you could do was the vigil, you know, all night vigil, putting salt on the floor and stuff like that. And that's a really hard thing for people to do. Then it was you could use thermal photography and, you know, that, but that was very expensive. And most of the paranormal groups really had to know a lot about engineering and whatnot. The digital equipment has made it accessible to so many people, to anyone who wants to do it, in a way that's never been out there before. So that's actually quite helpful.
Do you think people were always interested in ghosts, or just now that it's becoming?
Oh yeah, every culture has all kinds of ghost stories, and we've certainly our own culture goes back to the spiritualism of the 19th century and. Ghosts have been part of all world cultures.
I just think that's so cool because we're doing the Ghostly Talk Radio and talking about this stuff every week.
And you saw in Cemetery Stories when I went to Oaxaca, Mexico, for the Day of the Dead parties, you know, and they were asking And of course, the idea is they're bringing down the spirits of the dead once a year so they can commune with them and party with them all night and then send them back. And they just don't understand, why don't we do this in America? I said, I don't know either. We should. But we're scared of ghosts.
we're scared of them because of Hollywood.
Right.
But what happens is that even in the old Celtic, because like our Halloween is based on the old Celtic traditions, and what happens is that's the time of year where they actually set a plate for their deceased loved ones at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And they fill it with food, and then I guess the next morning they probably empty it out.
But no, here's what happens is the ghosts take their nurturance from it, but they leave the food, and they leave a spiritual substance in the food, and now you, as the person who set the plate out, can eat the food. You won't get any flavor because the ghosts have taken it.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but the ghosts have left something behind for you now to take them into you.
Oh, see, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's an absolutely brilliant. I think it's a wonderful ritual. It's reconnecting you with your own, with your past and your history and your loved ones.
That's right.
I think it's absolutely brilliant, and we don't do that.
Here's another one. I was just with a Sioux shaman last weekend, and he was telling me how every hair in his head represents one of his ancestors, and when he braids it to the right, that's over his heart, that's his mother's ancestors, and the other side is his father's ancestors. That was cool.
That's really neat, actually.
Yeah,
I like that.
Because they stay connected. They believe the ghosts are with us all the time and aware of us and connected, and why not live like that? Well, that really would make a difference in how you live your life, wouldn't it?
I think that's awesome. Catherine, we have like 1 minute left.
Okay.
So what I'm thinking is I want to say CatherineRamsland.com. It's linked up on our website, www.ghostlytalk.com. So CatherineRamsland.com. What do you have upcoming appearances, or are you still working? I know you're working on that book.
I'm working on the book. I have them scattered, but I don't do book tours. I just, if somebody invites me, I'll go. I'm doing one in Las Vegas, and so it's scattered and sporadic. I have nothing I can actually offer.
That's it. I'm going to call the local Barnes & Noble and beg them to try and get you out to Detroit. So.
Hey, I'm from Michigan. I go to Detroit all the time.
Really?
Oh, you're kidding.
I was just there in June.
How come I had no idea?
I'm from Ann Arbor.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Ann Arbor is fantastic. And haunted, by the way. But I'll tell you what, we got to leave that for yet another show, because this is it. Catherine Ramsland, thank you so very, very, very much.
Thank you. I had fun.
This was awesome. I'm so glad that we got to talk to you. Can you stay on the line for a moment while I close the show?
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to talk with you just a little bit afterwards, because the Gettysburg stuff, we want to write down names and stuff.
Of course.
So thank you. Everybody, this is it. That was the fastest 2 hours during the week. That was Ghostly Talk.
It flew by.
Yes, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
And I am Karma.
I'm Will.
We're going to make way now for W Paranormal coming up. W Paranormal comes up following Ghostly Talk every week. So enjoy that, and we'll see you back here next week.
Have a good week, everybody.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.